And that's the Soraya.
I wanted to be last because I wanted to hear all this wonderful talk. I must tell you that what I have written down and what I will tell you will probably be a little bit shocking and different from the rest of the panel. I am a bit excited just because this is the first that I've been in a peace meeting, and somebody actually has called the Iraqi government a model government. I am survivor of a large family who has given many lives to the fascist government of Iraq, and that is very painful to hear. So that is why my voice is shaking. I am used to public speaking. It's not that what makes me nervous. What makes me sad is that even the peace movement, and when that everybody congratulates and talks about with such high hopes, can actually travel over the mountainous parts of Turkey and not see the desperation and the genocide of Kurdish people on the way there to go and create a human shield in Baghdad, go over the mass graves of our people. That's what is sad. I want now to address what I was actually given as a topic for this conversation. And I would like to start with the consequences of war. And I want to tell you what consequences of this horrific war. Nobody likes war. I don't either. I've gone through too many of them. I've seen too many bodies and bombs. But I would like to tell you what the immediate consequence of this war was for us. I knew that the moment the war would start in the Northern Front, the moment my relatives who were squeezed in this little area of Kurdistan in the north would get a chance, they would be going to look for the bodies of their sons and daughters. So the first consequence for us was that we got the news that yes, my aunts and uncles, my cousins, they went down to the area near Kirkuk, they found the mass graves, they started digging up bones and bodies. So now, the first consequence, we know who was still in the prisons and who actually was found by a piece of their clothing or maybe by their blonde hair. So that was our immediate consequence. The next was a reunification of some families, because as you know, the no-fly zone, as I mentioned to you, was a very small part of Kurdistan, of I should say, Iraqi-occupied Kurdistan. And many of the families who were still under the Iraqi occupation, the Saddam's regime, were reunited with their families who had fled and pitched tents around that area. And many of the people who, through the Arabization, were kicked out of their homes as early as spring of 2001. We're talking about very recent situations where kids talking about, I want to just to go home, and sitting in the rain under a homemade tent 20 kilometers from their home in the villages around Kirkuk. So that was another thing. By the time they got there, some of those villages, the Arab people who have been given $30,000 and the homes had already left because they basically were either scared of being targeted by Kurds or any other reason, they figured they better leave. So some of those villages were empty. Unfortunately, in Kirkuk, the situation is different. The Turkish government has claims on that oil and therefore has threatened that if Kurds take their homes back, that the Turkish army is going to roll in. Now, what happened, the next consequence of this war, just like every other one that the U.S. has been involved in that area, is the betrayal of Kurds. So the U.S. government decided, you know what, even these villages that are empty, we are not going to allow the Kurds back in. So what we are going to do is to kick the Kurds back out again to their own homemade tents, and we're going to bring the Arabs back, because we actually do not want to be confronting our Arab allies, just in case we go against the Arab governments in the region. Now, it might be okay for U.S. to go against Syria, but not against the Emirate or Saudi Arabian government. So that was the next consequence. We're being betrayed there again. We have to be kicked out of our homes one more time to fulfill U.S.'s foreign policies. Now, as my sister got me from the airport this afternoon, and as we were driving in, she was telling me that she was watching this interview on TV, and we have satellite, we watch all the Middle Eastern stations, and this Kurdish reporter was talking to one of the heads of the Arabic tribes in Baghdad, in Iraq, and the reporter was asking him, what do you think, because what do you think of federation, the Kurds, they're trying to make concessions, so they're not asking for independence. And this Arab sheikh turned around and said, and why not? And the Kurdish reporter got very scared and tried to say, well, you know, because the situation right now, everybody's against it and all that. And so the gist of this is that we have been so crushed, we have been so oppressed, that we have even lost the confidence of saying we are a nation, we deserve our own country. That even when somebody else says it, we get scared. Now contrast that with East Timor, contrast it with Palestine, contrast it with any of the other movements around the world that you will happily sell your belongings and go and protect. There is a big difference. We are in the bottom of the barrel. I would like to address racism here. I've been in this country for over 20 years now. And for the first time when I arrived here, when people talked of racism, I still thought that, you know, of course I was included. I'm a Kurd. Nobody likes us in that area, the Turks, Persians, you know, Arabs. And after a while, I realized every peace, every activist or peace movement or any kind of gathering I went to in this great mission area or Berkeley, when the talk of racism came about, the poetry, the language was about the beautiful brown skin. Well, I got news for you. The way we actually know a mass grave belongs to us is by the color of our children's hair, because it's blonde. In our world, the racism is against us because we're Caucasians. And there is 30 million of us. So when you write your poetry, when you talk about racism, remember, it can go both ways. And it does exist. Now, we are lucky. We are not like the Anglos. Our children lose their blonde hair when they get to the age of 8 or 9. So in some sense, I guess there's a consolation in that. I want to quickly address the solidarity, because I saw that in here. And unfortunately, I have very bad experience with that, solidarity between groups in this country. First of all, at the time when a civil war was going on in Turkey, and when Kurdish people were being given about 45 minutes notice and their villages were being blown up. A full-fledged civil war was being totally financed by taxes here. We went around and we tried to mobilize people, said this is a civil war, we're paying for it. We did not get much of a response. And then it actually, right around that time, and even equal to that time, there were about 300 chemical bombs that were dropped in northern Iraq, in the Iraqi-occupied Kurdistan, with the grand finale of Halabja, where I lost 30 of my extended family. And we went to the Arab organizations and the Palestinian organizations in the universities and saying that we are going to have a demonstration. And I was in Boston, the center of the educational center of this country, and said that this has happened. The Boston Globe in the third page had one paragraph saying that American Army denies that there was ever a chemical bomb, and I was actually getting photos back from Halabja. And I went and tried to gather support from the Arab student groups, from the peace movement. We ended up being 8 people in the center of Boston, put with signs that says that 5,000 people died in one day. And the deans from the same schools, the next day, they were on the radio with Daniel Shore saying that the Palestinian issue is the most important issue because we have lost 500 people in the past year. So it will take a lot of convincing for the Kurdish to actually believe that any of the Arab movements in the region, or the American peace movement, or the Japanese rock bands will have any interest in the faith of that 30 million people. And I think in some sense, it is a shame, because they are the epitome of what colonial powers have done to the world. They divided a people that should have been a sovereign nation for their own gains. And at this point, that very vivid reason that should be there for our solidarity and for us working together is actually being pushed aside, because the entire peace movement has gotten caught in Arab nationalism and Islamic fascist feelings. We have Zoroastrians. Every time, and this might be another consequence of this war, if we end up with a federal government, we might have to start calling our Zoroastrians or our Yazidis devil worshippers again, because that's what we're called. I would like to talk about imperialism and colonialism for a moment. No imperialism is tangible, in your face, or you can touch until they actually start dropping bombs on you. For us, Turkey is an imperialist. For us, Syria is an imperialist. We have people in Syria who cannot even get birth certificates. They do not give most Kurds birth certificates. We cannot take our children to hospitals. It doesn't matter if there's a sanction or not. They will die, because that area has oil, and the oil only belongs to those sovereign nations and the Arab nation there. Nobody else has a right to it. That's an imperialist for us. The Iranian government is another imperialist. We have a Kurdish Democratic Party in Iran. When people get arrested, usually within 5 days they're executed without any trial. Iran is another imperialist. Right now, the looming one, the one that is very scary to us, is of course Turkey. We don't know what will happen in Iraq, but I sure hope that we do not. The Kurds will have the confidence to stand up to Arab imperialism and to say that we do deserve our own government, we do deserve our own country, and we do have oil on our land and uranium and a lot of other riches. And we are not going to send money to other parts of the Arab world for political reasons, for any other act, whatever you want to name it from your own point of view, while our children are suffering. I want to give you one last thought, sentence. Actually, I was watching TV. This is Abu Dhabi has pretty much, they were at the time of fall of Baghdad, they were bringing many of these Shia clergy to talk. And this one person came up and said, you know what? In the north, in the no-fly zone, with the money they got from oil for food, since 1996, in 6 years, they built more schools than in 60 years of existence of this country, in that little area. And I spoke to Norman Solomon about his book, about the fact that sanctions killed babies, because this clergy turned around and said, this clergyman, sanctions didn't kill our babies. They starved to death because of Saddam. Now, if you compare those two together, what you actually ascertain from is this. Sanctions are horrific. We all know that. The children who died in the hospital are a very small percentage. The rest died of malnutrition because that government used the money to build palaces. And I truly believe, if anybody has any doubt that Iraq had chemical bombs, just come and talk to me because I bear the scars.